Questions, we had questions.
No, I just wanted to do the packages.
Okay, Karen, you want to go ahead with the policy packages first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, agents' compensation, the governor's recommended budget for 2001-03 is $45,856,760.
Where are you in the, in your book, you have a...
Is that 51?
Well, actually, the number is still in merchandising, but the budget package that I'm going to get into now is under the budget package, 2001-03 budget packages, and it will be the second one, and it's on page 80.
80?
80, yeah.
Okay.
This budget package is our retail system modernization package. Basically, what we are asking you for is a one-time, $1.5 million increase in our limitation for updated equipment. As I mentioned to you earlier, our liquor business is a $519 million business, and we feel that investing in the modern retail equipment, such as point-of-sale equipment and upgrades, would enhance our productivity, permit optimal inventory control, and provide better service to our customers. This package would be funded by a temporary 4 cents a bottle price increase. There would not be any impact on the general fund or any other recipients of liquor revenue. And to give you some background as to why this is necessary, our retail liquor system has never had an upgrade in the infrastructure. Many of our 236 agents are still using antiquated, even manual systems to report information to our main offices. Our main office needs information for all of our functions. We need information for purchasing product, for filling agents' orders, and for tracking, managing, and accounting for all of the inventory. Although there are 120 agents who do have our point, who have a point of sale equipment, and they do transmit orders and inventories to us, they do not transfer any sales information to us. And there are many other agents who work on a manual system, and basically they use Scantrons. Scantron forms are, to the modern retail system, is the Chad ballot cards are to modern elections. You have to use a number 2 pencil. If you put it in the wrong place, you get the wrong product. This is one order for one store. All of our stores get an order once a week except for the very small rural stores. This same agent does this once a week to get their order, and then once a month they have to do a bigger version of it for their entire inventory. So what we are trying to do is to get everybody on the same electronic platform so that we have no more of the Scantron process, but we have everyone on an electronic process giving us sales information, orders, and inventory via electronic means. We also lack ability for two-way communications currently, and our suppliers don't have detailed sales data on, at the store level. So what we would like to do is develop these efficiencies by optimizing our inventory investment for both the state and the distillers, and we'll have better information about what products are selling, where they're selling, and when they're selling. So we know that we need an updated, modern, more universal infrastructure, but we also realize that our liquor agents simply can't afford to buy the equipment on their own. So what we would like to do is distribute $1,345,000 to our liquor agents, and we'd like to do it as follows. 135 of the top volume stores would each receive $7,500. Now, a number of them already have point-of-sale systems, but they're going to have to go to their vendors and have their software enhanced so that they can give us their sales information. And some of the other stores, the 15 other stores in that large group, are on a manual system, so they're actually going to have to go out and they're going to have to buy point-of-sale system for their stores. We have our medium-sized stores. We have about 50 of those, and we would suggest that they get $5,400. They would go out and they would purchase a one point-of-sale system for their store, and again, they would give us sales, inventory, and ordering information electronically. And finally, we have 51 of our smallest stores throughout the state. They would each receive $1,225, and that would help to fund a PC setup for internet access so that they would be able to send all of their sales inventory and ordering information via the internet. In addition to that, we are asking for a limited duration project manager for $155,000, and that person would simply be hired for the time period of this project. They would implement the package, and they would work very closely with all of our liquor agents to find solutions to each of the groups that I've mentioned. Again, the package would be funded by a temporary surcharge on each bottle of liquor. We'd collect 4 cents per bottle at the time of sale, and there would not be any impact to general fund or any state or local entities. What are the benefits of this? Well, the Liquor Commission is going to be able to relay information electronically to agents instead of relying on our mail systems. Currently, we use UPS or faxing or phoning, which takes a long time to 236 people. We will be able to transmit sales information to our distillers so that they will have better information in developing marketing plans and strategies on their own. We'll use the data to help agents better manage their inventories because we're going to be able to have timely suggested orders for them. And agents will gain efficiencies in their own operations because they're not going to have to fill these things out, and they also aren't going to have a crew to take an inventory on the last day of every month manually as they currently do. Customers should have better product selection at their stores because of the better inventory control, and the citizens of Oregon should benefit because of better optimal dollars invested in liquor inventory. So the vision of having all of our stores communicating electronically can be realized with no cost to the state with this package. Thank you.
Okay. Questions? Representative Johnson.
My bucket runneth over at this point. Let me start and do them backwards based on what you've just talked about.
Okay.
You said that you're asking for a $455,000 limited duration position for the project manager. Did I hear the number correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, no, it's $155,000.
Oh, thank you. I was going to say how can you, with the three, you're going to give $7,500 to your top volume, $5,400, and then $1,300. How can you assure that there will be any consistency in the quality of the information? It seems to me that by, where's the standardization come from, so that you're talking the same language to all of your folks. This seems to be an invitation to have 236 different systems.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we certainly won't have 236 systems, but we already have 120 agents who are out in the system now, and I believe there are 7 different point of sale systems out there. We have provided the criteria that we need for agents to communicate to us electronically. We provide that to the people who develop the systems for the agents, and they make their criteria match what we need so that we get consistent information coming in. Now, what the systems look like in the agent stores, they can have whatever systems they care to have as long as the information comes through to us in the manner in which we need it. And it's worked quite well, actually.
Manner in which we need it, does that include format? Or are you going to be getting all these different formats and you'll have to have somebody sifting through all the formats?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't believe we get into the detail of format. But we have an expert here on information systems, and she can probably answer that question a little better than I.
I guess at some point, I don't want to get into the micromanagement of deciding what systems, but it seems to me to be a policy consideration that you are getting consistent information from all of your stores in a consistent format, so that there's some level of standardization and you don't have folks being paid to hunt through all these different formats. That's the first question about the upgrade of the point of sale system. And I guess my second question is, you have described all of the things that the Liquor Commission needs, sales data. Are there any is there any encouragement to the agents to put in some kind of a point-of-sale system that helps them, for example, with handling checks or credit card processing? Has any research occurred that makes that process streamlined, and you're recommending that to your agents, or is it just here's the money, go forth and buy?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we have not looked at making checks or credit cards more streamlined in regard to point-of-sale systems. One of the areas that certainly is streamlined for our liquor agents is the fact that they have a perpetual inventory once they have a point-of-sale system. And they're able to save dollars in their stores because they don't have to do a monthly inventory, which they have to do on a manual system. They bring a crew in the last of the month. They do a manual inventory in order to accomplish this. As far as the credit card information, we simply have swipe machines, and it doesn't really interact with the most of our point-of-sale systems, as far as I'm aware.
Who pays the fees on the swipe?
The Liquor Commission pays the fees for the liquor on the swipe.
Okay. And check processing, how does that?
Check processing is all paid by the state. There is a criteria that if a liquor agent takes a check, which liquor agents are supposed to do, and they get a driver's license and a check guarantee card, and if the check should bounce, the liquor agent is held harmless. That's actually an obligation of the state.
Oh, okay. That runs counter to some information I've gotten. That's very helpful. Madam Chair, can I
continue, please?
The other questions that I have all kind of devolve around compensation. You've explained in some detail that you're going to a merit-based system. And that, to me, at least suggests a level of subjectivity in the rating. Dispel that mythology in my mind.
No, I, Representative Johnson, I think you're absolutely right, and that's why we went to on the subjective areas, the soft areas, the areas of store appearance, the areas of merchandising. We actually went to an outside firm to get the expert to actually have the same eyes look across the state at all of the liquor stores. We agree with you that there are areas within the evaluation that are very subjective, which is why we tried to take that piece out of our hands. The bulk of the evaluation is very objective. It has defined criteria. But in those soft areas, we really wanted to have a fair and consistent baseline from which to go to the next step, if you will. So that's what we tried to accomplish.
In your testimony, you mentioned an agent's advisory council. Can you describe a little bit about what that agent's advisory council looks like and what role they play in formatting some of your new innovations?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, our agent's advisory council is made up of, I believe, 8 or 9 agents. There's one from every class, each size store, if you will, and also each type of store. And they are elected by their fellow agents. We meet 4 times a year. And we have a round table. Typically they come in and they will have a meeting for half a day to decide what issues they'd like to talk about. And then we have the second half of the day where all of the commission staff who's involved with merchandising and the topic come together and have a meeting. We've talked with these folks very intensely about our changes in contracts, our changes in the evaluation forms, basically everything that we've been moving toward in the last 2 years has been a topic at our agents advisory council.
And if I went back and looked at the minutes, how do you operate? Is there general agreement before you move forward with something that the agent's advisory council has reviewed it and by some mechanism, either consensus or vote, agreed or violently disagreed? Or what happens when the agency's at odds with your advisory committee?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't know that we've ever really been at odds. We don't take votes. We do have minutes taken, and the whole point of the Agents Advisory Council is to have a dialogue and to get that information out to all of our liquor agents. And so we may have, you know, disagreements, if you'd like to call them that, but that's shown in the notes. The explanations are shown in the notes, and we'll come back together and have another conversation in a few weeks or months or whatever it takes. But it really is, the whole point of that council is, first of all, to help us get operational questions dealt with and answered, and secondly, to inform all 236 liquor agents about what the issues are.
I'm very impressed with that kind of a relationship between an advisory committee that's made up by folks that are affected by the agency. Does the advisory committee or members of the commission ever visit stores and actually have on-sites or away on-site visits or away meetings, so that you're meeting in Ontario or gives me an opportunity to butter up the chair or the vice chair? Do you have away meetings?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we do a couple of different things. First of all, our commission has meetings twice a year outside of the Portland area. And while we haven't been to Ontario, we have been to LeGrand.
You've seen one part of Eastern Oregon, you've seen them all, right?
My goodness gracious. Haven't gotten the real beautiful stuff yet.
In addition to our commissioners traveling, we also periodically have what we call road show meetings, you know, for agents, and the director of stores, a number of people will go and have meetings in Medford and Coos Bay and Eugene and Bend and so on. And in addition to that, we also, our chairman travels quite a bit, so he's out in our liquor stores quite frequently. And our director, myself,
for visitation purposes.
Yes. of course. So, actually, we try to get out as much as we can.
If the chair will indulge me, two more. In a committee that I sat in yesterday, we had a long conversation about the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, credentialing licensees within 500 feet of schools, elementary schools or secondary schools. And I heard in your presentation in several different spots your desire to have liquor stores move into attractive neighborhoods. Reconcile that for me. On the one hand, you take a great deal of criticism for the placement of your licensees. On the other hand, your business plan seems to encourage moving into more visible, in some cases more upscale, and you specifically use the word neighborhoods. I can't connect that. Help me.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we're talking about shopping centers. Typically, you don't have schools or churches or daycare centers there. We've located three stores recently, and they're all in the kind of typical shopping center where you'll have a grocery anchor, you'll have a series of outlets. It is a public process. We do notify people, so you know, if there is opposition, we do know about it. These three, except for the one in Hillsboro, went very smoothly, and we didn't have a lot of opposition. We haven't, to date, encountered any opposition in the Bend store. The Bend store is going to go into the east area where there's that new shopping area out there. What we got from the survey was that people like to shop where they do their normal shopping. So you go to your grocery store and then you go to your various others. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about next to the school or, you know, right next to houses. Typical commercial areas.
And one last question. I can understand from a female point of view that going into Nordstrom's, I want to look at all the shoes. How do you gauge a retail experience in a liquor store as having some special, I mean, women having some special sensitivities to this? You go in, buy a bottle, you leave. I find that absolutely astonishing.
Representative Johnson, what we've found is that some of our liquor stores are, you know, I'd say 5 years ago they were dirty, they were ugly. They had bars on the windows. We would get complaints from legislators a lot saying, geez, they look like jails. And so we've paid more attention to the cosmetics. And these are not necessarily expensive items. If you, there's a store in Medford where the wife is the decorator, and she has seasonal decorations for every season. Fourth of July, the Fourth of July decorations go up. I think our survey reveals those are the kind of shopping experiences that appeal more to women. There still is a bit of a stigma for a woman going into a liquor store. And if it's dirty and ugly, it's unlikely she's going to go.
As you're encouraging your agents to do those sorts of retail enhancing procedures, is there any discussion at your advisory level about compensation? Because you're asking retailers to move to different locations that, by the very description you provided, may entail higher lease costs or ownership costs, and to make the merchandising experience more exciting or enticing. All that costs money, and for those of us that have run small businesses, as I'm listening to your encouragement of all of these upgrades, does compensation get discussed at the advisory committee commensurate with the upgrades that you're encouraging in your business plan?
Representative Johnson, yes, and in fact, we, the last couple of biennia, had a number of packages that would have enhanced agents' compensation, but they didn't make it through the process. So we have developed those packages.
This process.
Haven't made it through the governor's budget and haven't made it through this process.
Right. I didn't know whether you're talking about your advisory committee
oh,
process.
No, we've worked with our advisory committee in developing various packages that would have, you know, yet again enhanced agents' compensation. And we do certainly recognize that those things do cost, although in some cases we have documented that sales have increased when they've moved to better locations, improved the environment.
Thank you, and thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence.
It's real thrilled. I've never seen a bucket full of questions. Let's say Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for missing a portion. I just wanted to make sure that I understood a couple of issues relative to the actual term merchandising. What is the – I noticed that we're spending a total of $7.7 million on merchandising. Please list for me, if you would, please, what all of the elements are in the merchandising that we're doing. What that would include.
The merchandising area includes our purchasing division. It includes our distribution division, which is the 125,000 foot warehouse with all of the folks in it who bring everything in and out. It includes store operations.
Store operations would include?
It includes 9 or 10 staff folks who work directly with our liquor agents to work with, you know, any issues that they may have regarding product, store appearance, employee theft, those kinds of things. We also
nine employees travel the state then?
Actually, 5 travel the state, the director as well as 4 district representatives. We also have the staff in the office who take orders over the phone, answer phone requests from citizens and that type of thing.
Okay, so merchandising isn't advertising, it's actually the purchasing, distribution, warehousing, and so forth. Then.
And store operations.
And the store operations. And I assume that we have a breakdown of those various budget items. So let me follow a line of questioning. Relative to the new stores that Director Erickson was just talking about, those new agencies, the locations were broadly accepted to add new locations. Was there much opposition, community opposition, against adding new OLCC locations?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, there actually was no community problems in adding new stores. However, we did have in Hillsboro, the first area that we tried to relocate or locate the new store, there was some community opposition there because our liquor agent, he felt the store was too close to him. So we moved it out a little further. But the concept of a liquor store was not a problem in any of the areas where we located the stores.
And then in that regard, do you hold public hearings before you proceed with one of those, the addition of one of those stores?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we don't hold public hearings other than at the commission meeting. However, we do meet with chiefs of police, mayors, city council folks. We talk to the legislators in the areas. We talk to the liquor agents in the areas. So, you know, we try to flesh out any issues that there may be.
No advertised public meetings then, just private meetings with,
that's
with
correct.
The local citizenry that are in charge. And can I just ask, I know we've reviewed this previously, but I want to make sure that I understand. When an agency contract comes up and is available, and you've got three new locations, how many applications, how many total applications are received for a vacant store, and then how many responsive bidders or applicants do we have high and low for these various locations as they come available?
Representative Butler, at this point I'd have to guess. I don't have those figures. Okay. We have a very good pool of agents taking over our stores. If we have a large volume store that comes up in the Portland area, we could have 20 to 30 applications.
Responsive bidders.
Well, that will be the world, okay? The world will be 20 or 30, and that will get honed down to 12 or 13 that look on paper as though they're responsible and good prospects. And then through an interview process, that will be honed down to probably 4 or 5 who will come before the commissioners and make a presentation, and the commissioners will choose. In the realm of the new stores, in Beaverton and Hillsboro, we actually had a very limited pool of people who were interested in opening a new store. And I think the reason for that is that not having an existing store, the rents in those areas are incredibly high. So we had a pretty limited pool, but we do have two agents in those stores that are doing very well. We had a larger pool for the Clackamas and a Bend store, and again, we had a number of people that we brought forward to the commissioners for those two stores.
So, out of for each time, let's just pick an application for a new or for an existing store, perhaps a dozen what would appear to be pretty good prospects would apply. And then if you averaged a little less than half a dozen that would actually make presentations, those people have been qualified, they meet the financial requirements, they meet the background requirements and so forth. Is there a fee that we charge for that, the whole process of processing those?
No, Representative Butler, there's not. And what we try to do is when we bring the people before the commissioners, staff's position is that if the commissioners choose any one of those individuals, whichever one they choose, they're just fine. So everybody is well thought of by the time they get to that level.
Okay. I don't think I have any further questions in that regard, Manager.
Any other questions, Representative Johnson?
Thank you. Representative Butler touched a little bit on travel, and you enumerated how your folks travel around, including the commission. On that question response that you gave us this morning, it indicates out-of-state travel. Two questions about that. Why out-of-state travel?
We actually, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, there are a number of national committees that we participate in. There are 18 control states, and there is a group called NABCA, the National Alcohol Beverage
Control
Association. So we're a member of that, and we do travel to those conferences where we talk with the other folks from the control states. We also belong to the national group of liquor administrators, which is called NCSLA. And we also belong to a national association for a regulatory aspect of the business. So by and large, most of our travel involves those three areas, but we've also been going to electronic e-government conferences. There have been a couple of those this year, actually the last 2 years, that a number of folks have attended.
A follow-up, Madam Chair?
Unless I'm reading your response incorrectly, it looks like you're about 50% over on your travel budget. Why is that?
Current biennium is unusually high, and about half of the cost of travel has been spent in relationship to our management business system. We are in the process of installing a new system. We have, Ms. Terry can tell us the current status, that we have terminated our contractor. We've had quite a bit of difficulty with it, but the plan had been to install something called a SAP system. That's German warehouse technology. It's one of the leading software technologies in the world. We have had to send staff to go inspect the operation of that technology to determine whether or not it would work for us. We've had staff go to training sessions that are SAP related so that they understand the technology. We have sent people to a number of technology conferences. As I indicated, the future inefficiency in this business is e-commerce, and we need to get our folks up to speed so we understand the opportunities that are available to us as we move into the technological age. So we've spent quite a lot of money on technology, travel kinds of stuff. Most of that stuff's not available in state, so it was a pretty unusual year. Now, if we should decide we need to change to a different kind of software, we may need some of those expenditures. We really need to see it in operation to see if it is going to be workable.
Have you read the critique of the DMV computer difficulties?
Representative Johnson, several years ago I did. This is a much smaller expenditure. We believe that we did everything that we should have done. It was a year in which there was an enormous amount of business for contractors. When we went out to bid for this contractor, we got two bids. They were both unresponsive. We had to go out a second time. We got one bid. Part of it was the climate in which we did it. We got a contractor that, you know, we believe, we checked them out, we believe they could do the job, and as it turned out, they, in our view, did not do the job. They were not responsive. Some of the money went for hardware that's been purchased. We have that hardware. We're in the process of looking for a replacement contractor, and Ms. Terry will be able to give you a little more detail on that.
Please follow.
Is the purchased hardware serviceable?
Oh, yeah.
And what's the relationship with the software? Purchased, leased? I'm trying to get a sense of how vulnerable you are, given that you've already had a contract failure.
Do we want to move into that topic now? Because I think you're going to need some of the background.
I'll be happy to hold the question. Let me ask you one more. When there is both a contract failure that may have resulted in some cost to the agency, as well as a 50% overrun in a budget item for out-of-state travel, are the agents' compensation affected by any of those, or are they held harmless?
Representative Johnson, they are held harmless. They're in a separate line item. We cannot touch them.
We'll take up the technology issue at a little bit later time, and that brings up a whole new series of questions that we will address that, and probably it may not hurt to find out from Carl Wanky from Department of Administrative Services what we may have done wrong, but we don't replicate that in any other department. Okay, please proceed with your question.
Okay. I'd like to call up Linda Ignowski, who will do the regulatory review, and she will do the regulatory package.
Let's go ahead and get started.
Okay.
is this a good time to start a new section or within 10 minutes of closure? And I do have a couple of questions that I could ask.
Okay. How long do you think you can take?
My presentation should, I can do the, a little faster.
Overview?
It's not very long.
Okay,
yeah.
Please, Linda, go ahead.
Before I get started, I'm going to add this to your little piggy because I know me. And an acronym's going to fall out of my mouth. I like to have credit bad balance. For the record, I'm Linda Ignowski. I'm the Regulatory Program Director for the Commission, and I'm pleased today to come to you to give you a brief overview of the regulatory program. It does not minimize what we do, but I know you've been here a long time, and so I'll just give you a quick overview of what we do. Our goal in our regulatory program, and my presentation is under the regulatory tab, so I'm going to whiz through this and leave out some things so you can read it at your leisure. Our main goal in the regulatory program is to maintain statewide compliance with liquor laws while being firm but fair and balancing our service and control. And I know Representative Johnson asked about the firm, fair, flexible statement, so I would like to elaborate on that just a little bit here. I think the Liquor Commission believes we need to be firm, and it's going back to, as U.S. legislators develop laws, I think you expect them to be followed. And therefore, somebody needs to make sure they're regulated and that people are complying with them. And so we are trying to enforce the laws that are on the books, but yet being fair. If it's just like a comparison, if you know that no one is ever going to check your speed limit on the highway, I don't think there's very many people who will stay at 65 or close to 65. Although if you do now.
I'm shocked.
But, and so this is our philosophy, is that there needs to be some check. U.S. legislators have put laws on the books for a reason, and it's our responsibility to make sure they're followed. On the same point, we need to be fair, because if we're too firm, we may look heavy-handed. If we're too lenient, then it looks like we're weak and inefficient and ineffective. And so we look at this as trying not to be arbitrary, and to try to treat all licensees and permittees fairly and consistently, but also looking at individual circumstances and looking at the individual facts and trying to balance and find a balance of being consistent, fair, but regulating the way we were charged to do. And so that's where that kind of comes. The flexibility, in my point of view, is trying to be able to allowing the agency to adjust to the environment and the times, and to the issues and the problems. Right now, we believe underage drinking is a huge issue here in Oregon. 5 years now, it may be something else, and we need to be able, flexible, to move our resources and our ability to be able to address those areas. So that's kind of where this fair, firm, flexible, balanced statement comes from. Our licensees, I think, deserve a fair and responsive service, and we try to provide that. Our public, you know, expects to be able to purchase alcohol from a variety of locations in our state. But I think the public also expects that our businesses will comply with all liquor laws, especially when it deals with selling to visibly intoxicated persons or selling to minors. Our neighborhoods expect our licensed establishments not to have an adverse impact on the neighborhood. So our staff, you know, tries to balance all these issues by working in partnerships with law enforcement, local governments, neighborhood associations, other state agencies to try to provide quality service to Oregonians, yet trying to maintain responsible alcohol use. The regulatory program has three basic functions. The first one is licensing. Every person and business that sells, serves, distributes, manufactures alcohol in the state of Oregon has to be licensed. We have a process to screen out licensees who believe their history shows there will be a poor compliance for liquor laws. We have a staff of about 19 and a half investigators who are responsible for the state's license actions. Last year alone, our staff completed 4,500 actions in the year 2000. Currently, we have around 9,338 licensees, give or take. It fluctuates from day to day. And approximately 8,000 of those are places like package stores, restaurants, taverns, and hotels, brew pubs, and wineries. The second function that the regulatory program has is issuing service permits. anyone who sells and serves alcohol by the drink has to have a service permit in the state of Oregon. And this requires them to take a server education class, and they have to pass a criteria for being able to hold a service permit, and that's renewed every 5 years. Last year alone, in 1 year, we processed 27,000 applications. We had over 20,000 people take the server education class, and we currently have 88,000 service permittees in the state of Oregon. And what's amazing is that we have only three people who are handling all this tremendous amount of work. Our third function is compliance and enforcement. We believe that licensees, the majority of licensees, are most likely to comply with laws if they understand them, for one thing, and know what is expected of them. So our enforcement effort is very heavy on education and training. We provide a lot of educational classes and opportunities for our licensees to understand the laws and know what's expected of them. I'd like to show you some of the compliance stats that we completed just in 1 year. We have 35 and a half inspectors in the state of Oregon, and last year alone they issued 509 citations, 762 administrative violations. They conducted over 14,000 observations on our licensed premises. They reviewed over 8,000 police reports, checked over 8,000 service permits. They were part of 251 unlicensed events, such as keg parties. We issued over 11,000 verbal instructions to our licensees. We conducted 1,116 minor decoy operations. In January, we had visited 2,700 licensed establishments in our new program called Biannual Visits. As of today, we have visited over 4,300. And we checked over 18,000 identifications from minors at various events across the state. We also conducted over 650 training classes for licensees across the state. Overall, our inspectors have conducted over 74,000 compliance actions in 1 year. And to me, this is remarkable with the amount of staff we have and the work that they have to do, that they have accomplished this much in 1 year. I'd like to share with you where our offices are at. Some of you know, some of you don't. We have divided the region, our staff, up into six regions in the state. Region 1 and 2 are in the Portland metropolitan area that covers this area. Region 3 is the Salem area. Region 4 is Newport, Eugene, and Roseburg area. And the Roseburg should probably be over here. And then Region 5 is Medford, Klamath Falls, and North Bend. And Region 6 is the rest of the state. The regional office is in Bend, and we have a satellite office in Pendleton. So that's where our offices are located at. I just would also like to give you a brief update on some of the budget notes and the new programs that were developed out of the last session. There are more detailed information in your booklets under the tab called Budget Notes or Legislation of 1999, and you can look at them at your leisure, but I thought I'd just give you a brief overview of what we've done in the past year and a half. One of the new programs that was developed out of the last session was the Responsible Vendor Program. This program was developed to safeguard licensees from cancellation or non-renewal of the license based on sales to minors done by their employees. We have about almost 1,000 licensees who are registered into this program. We're a little disappointed in that number because we have about over 8,000 people who will be able to enroll in this program. So we are working with the industry to try to heighten the awareness of this program and get more people enrolled in it. The other program that came out of the session was the clerk training program. This program was developed as a proactive program to get training for grocery store clerks who sell to minors. They are required to take training within a certain amount of days, or they are not able to sell alcohol in that store anymore. We've had about 221 clerks in this program. 104 have been terminated. 74 have been retrained. 5 have lost, have changed jobs to something that is other than selling alcohol, and the rest of them are still pending cases. Another program that came out of the session was something I think Representative Butler was instrumental in, was the age verification equipment. And this is a handheld one. I thought I'd just show you. The ones that are in the stores are more elaborate and they cost a little more money. This is a handheld one that just came out. And what it does, it checks ID. All of us have those driver's licenses with little barcodes in it. You can either scan it or you can do infrared to check, and it'll tell you the true ID of this person on it, and it's been very handy. This new legislation allowed licensees for the first time to have an alternative to a civil penalty. Normally, it was either they had to pay a fine or they had to serve a suspension. For the first two violations, one time only, they can use the ability to purchase age verification equipment in lieu of their fine or suspension. We give them about a $2,475 reduction in their penalty, or a 15-day reduction in their suspension if they choose to purchase this equipment. We've had about 160 licensees take advantage of this, and it's really advantage to us too, because once they get these installed, if the people use them, or the ones in the stores are actually bigger, they have virtually done away with selling to minors. It's a very good safeguard.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
How expensive is that little device?
This one is around $600. The ones that are in the stores are around $1,500, but we require them to buy one for every point of sale. So if they have, you know, two cash registers, they have to buy it for the two cash registers if they're going to sell alcohol through that to get the credit for it. They don't have to. It's their choice of doing this or not. And a lot of them have seen a real advantage to being able to purchase this. We have seen on-premises, like restaurants and taverns, picking up this one. They have a lot of what they call bouncers at the door, and they are using this to check ID, and it's a lot easier for them to do. So we're seeing a lot of on-premises starting to use the handheld one.
Does that also detect fraudulent or altered identification?
Yeah, it can, because it'll show what the barcode tells you, and it may be different than what's on the front of the ID. If they've altered it, the date, the name. So it's a really neat advice. And we have purchased a couple of these for our staff to use out there. I have taken this away from my people at Seaside for a couple of days, so I can show it to you. But they have used it at Seaside this last weekend, and they will use it next weekend. And it is amazing how many people. And also it deters when the minors know these are in the store or the big ones in the store, they are less likely to go in and try to use false ID or use somebody else's ID or use their own because they know it's going to be checked. So this was a good thing. The other thing that happened was our new sanction schedule was raised. Our maximum, we used to be only to sanction somebody $1,950. Last session, the legislature raised it to $4,950, and this definitely has gotten the attention of our licensees. This has put an impact on how important it is to stay in compliance with liquor laws. One of the budget notes we had last session was to balance our enforcement, as Ms. Erickson had mentioned before. We have grouped about six programs into this, and originally we had seven. We had one that the staff came up, they thought they had seen it someplace. It was called Burger, Fries, and Jail. We couldn't get this one off the ground. It was a good idea, but we couldn't get anybody to buy into helping us do that. But we added the main components of this balancing enforcement are the minor decoy operations, the cops and shops, the false ID program, the ID checking, and school contacts. And these are just figures that show some of the activity that we have done in trying to balance our enforcement. All of these programs are very proactive. Only one of them has a negative impact on licensees. Most of these are good programs for licensees. They help them. We're in there helping them stay in compliance with the law. So the minor decoy is the only one that may have a negative impact on our licensees. The last thing I'd like to mention is in our program is what we instituted last year called biannual visits. We felt it was very important that we are visible out there, that we're out there assisting our licensees and helping them understand the law. Many, many of our licensees have never been visited by an inspector, and so we are out there, and our goal is to, by the end of this year, to visit every single licensed premises in the state of Oregon to provide assistance and education. This has been a real positive experience. Even my staff, who hates me to add new things for them to do, have really thought this was a positive program and gotten a lot of positive feedback. Some of the accomplishments we've had, and I'll just let you read those, but we have accomplished a lot in the past few years in moving our program forward. And I'd just like to close, because most of you probably know this, but I think it's always kind of nice to reiterate it. Oregon is a real leader when it comes to our regulation of alcohol in across the nation. Oregon was the first state to have a mandatory sober education program back in 1985, and we've been a model. We were one of the first programs to institute a keg registration program back in 1978, and we were one of the first states to have a public venue rule that governed areas like the Rose Garden and the Memorial Coliseum and big stadiums. And some of the programs that came out of last session, like age verification equipment, the responsible vendor, and the clerk training program, were all pretty new to a lot of states, and we have shared these programs with other states. So I think we all should be proud of where we have come in the state. We are progressive in this area, and we are a model for many states. And just in closing, I just like to say I'm really proud of my staff. They have accomplished a lot. They're very dedicated to the work and to the state of Oregon and providing a safe environment for all citizens. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. And we don't have time for my budget package, I don't think.
I think we do, Linda. Are there questions at this time for Linda? And we'll pick this up tomorrow as getting ready to go into the budget package.
I tried.
Thank you very much. If there's no further business, then we'll go ahead and stand at rest until tomorrow at any time.